Hey, this is Doc Washburn. I've been thinking an awful lot lately about how so many of us in this country see things so differently. Been thinking about our blind spots. Today's show will be about Trump, Biden, RFK Jr., and our blind spots. We'll also have updates on Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens. Now, I want to start off with a very interesting point that Scott Adams made. Scott Adams, if the name sounds familiar, for many years has been the guy that writes the Dilbert comic strip in what used to be called newspapers. And he's out there on Twitter. I'm sorry, I just can't get used to calling it X. He's out there on Twitter with this little column called Levels of Awareness in Politics. And it starts with level one. Level one. They believe what their preferred news says and do not sample other sources. People at level one are not aware of counter arguments, and they're not aware that their news is mostly narrative. People in level two of awareness in politics actually do sample news from multiple sources but believe only their own sources are accurate. They think the other side is all narrative, but they're at least familiar with different sides of issues. Level three, level of awareness in politics. These are people who are aware that all news is fake, at least in the sense of missing some context and spin. This is also known as the Gelman amnesia. But folks at level three still believe the experts in various fields are usually correct. Level number four. People at level number four of awareness in politics understand that none of our experts are reliable. Some might be right, but none can be trusted without verification. The distortion of money makes no expert credible without verification. Then Scott Adams goes to level five of awareness in politics. People at level five see the gears of the machine, kind of like what Mike Benz explained to Tucker Carlson recently about how the government and the deep state have their hands in pretty much all media. To people at level five of political awareness, the republic no longer looks like whatever the founders intended originally. The control of powerful billionaires and intelligence professionals is now obvious to people at level five of political awareness. There's one more level, level six. People at level six are now dead because they know too much, also known as the Jeffrey Epstein level. So, I thought I'd start off the show today with a little bit of levity. I want to talk briefly about where we are in politics with Trump, Biden, and RFK Jr. And we'll get to Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens a little bit later. Biden, a guy that I have just refused to call president because he's just such a joke. Biden gave what was supposed to be a State of the Union address the other night. And I've read a lot about it. I've seen a lot of responses. Victor Davis Hanson is one of the sharpest men out there to comment on this sort of thing. And he's got a column on Twitter, and I just think it is my duty to share with you what he is saying. It's called One Angry Biden Lie After Another. He says, a demagogic, fuming Biden gave another Phantom of the Opera speech blasting conservatives for all the destruction that he has caused and has resulted in his own historic unpopularity. All too aware that he was confused and incoherent, his handlers felt that the antidote was to come out barking and bellowing at his imaginary enemies. Victor Davis Hanson says, any never Trumper who would vote for such a screeching maniac is suicidal. The lowest point of the night? Joe Biden of the Hunter Biden Family Consortium damned the money-grubbing so-called rich who he says don't pay their fair share of taxes. All of this while his own son is now facing multiple felony counts for not paying any income tax at all. And Joe himself has received lots of family money without paying tax on such so-called loan repayments. In truth, Biden gave the most livid State of the Union address in modern memory, a surreal teleprompted rant from a get-off-my-grass old man. At points, he started howling at the seated opposition and even called out Supreme Court justices. Determined not to reveal cognitive decline, Biden instead came late to the podium, shouting nonstop, grimacing in reptilian style for over an hour. If the planned Adderall-fueled screaming was to prove he was still alive, most would have preferred his drowsy incoherence. But mostly, the speech was one of abject lies, as he either blamed all his disasters on others or claimed they were his greatest achievements. Deficits? Why does he think we have high inflation and high interest rates after he took office? The debt was $28 trillion when he came in, and now after just 3 years, it's nearly $35 trillion and is now growing by $1 trillion every 100 days. At the current rate, a two-term Biden presidency would have, in aggregate, added $22 trillion more to the national debt. Ukraine? Biden started out with Ukraine. Not inflation, not the border, not crime. Does he remember he suspended military aid to Ukraine upon taking office? Does he know that Putin did not invade a neighboring country in just one administration of the last four? Does he know why? Does he recall his humiliation in Afghanistan that green-lighted Putin? There are now 700,000 combined casualties in Ukraine. And so what is the plan to end our Verdun? Now, that's actually a reference to a World War I battle that took place in 1916 on the Western Front in France. The battle was the longest of the First World War and took place on the hills of Verdun-sur-Meuse. I'm probably mispronouncing that. The German Fifth Army attacked the defenses of the fortified region of Verdun and those of the French Second Army on the right bank of the Meuse, using the experience of the Second Battle of Champagne in 1915, the Germans planned to capture the Meuse Heights, and it goes on and on and on, but it was the longest battle of World War I. It went from February 21st to December 18th, 1916. So sometimes with Victor Davis Hanson, you have to look stuff up. So he says there are 700,000 combined casualties in Ukraine. And so what is the plan to end our Verdun? Another six-month-long spring offensive against fortified lines? Next, abortion? Biden screamed that the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision outlaws abortion and threatens women's lives when it actually allows any state to let its own people determine their own laws. Is Trump's plan to let the states decide and to favor a 16-week ban more sensible than Biden's abortion on demand that would allow some 5,000 to 10,000 partial birth or post-21 weeks abortions? Well, Ms. Hansen, that's a good question. Actually, Trump has been throwing around a possibility of a compromise on a 15-week ban, not 16-week. But either way, that would legalize most abortions. The majority of abortions happen by 15 weeks. So the stance that Biden has, unlimited abortions right up to the time of birth, is horrific. The stance that Trump has of wanting to legalize most abortions is also horrific. I had not planned on getting into that yet, but Victor Davis Hanson just took me there. The border? Do we remember Mayorkas bragging in detail how Biden rescinded all of Trump's executive orders? He listed them by name. To destroy the border and let in 8 to 10 million illegal aliens? Biden campaigned on just that, calling on illegal aliens to surge the border. Inflation? It's up 17% since Biden took office. Prices of the stuff of life have risen 30%. Staple foods, fuel, appliances, and cars, shelter, mortgages, etc. January 6th. In Biden land, a buffoonish afternoon riot now trumps Pearl Harbor, or the 120 days of looting, rioting, violence, death, and injury of the Black Lives Matter and Antifa in summer 2020. Gaza? Basically, Hamas murders, rapes, tortures, and mutilates 1,200 Jews, takes 250 hostages, rapes and murders untold numbers of them, is shielded by civilians beneath mosques, schools, and hospitals in Gaza, and then the U.S. blames Israel for retaliating. Biden cites bogus Hamas fatality figures and promises to build a U.S. port on the Gaza coast to pour in massive aid to Hamas-controlled Gaza. This furious speech was a preview of the 2024 campaign. The Democrat nominee will run on abortion January 6th and the so-called booming economy, hoping that left-wing prosecutors can bankrupt or incarcerate Trump and ensure that in all the swing states, 70% of the electorate do not vote in person on Election Day. And that is Victor Davis Hanson. His article on Twitter entitled "One Angry Biden Lie After Another." If you don't realize what an evil man Joseph Robinette Biden has always been, I can't help you. I just can't help you with that. If you don't realize it, I don't know what to tell you. I've said it before, I'll say it again. As vice president under Obama, Joe Biden got to swear in senators, either reelected or new senators, every 2 years. Put your hand on the Bible, the whole family would be out there. It was on C-SPAN, there's video of it. Biden would say, okay, everybody look up at the cameras. And then, while everybody's looking up, he'd make sure a little girl was in front of him and touch them inappropriately. It is on video. It's out there. Do an internet search. Try DuckDuckGo for creepy Joe Biden. Don't take my word for it. No. Do not take my word for it. Again, go back to what Scott Adams said. Level one of awareness in politics: people believe what their preferred news says and do not sample other sources, not aware of counterarguments, not aware their news is mostly narrative. Hey, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a newscaster. I try to share news with you, but I have no idea how to keep my perspective out of the news. I'm trained as a talk show host. So just a reminder on that. Now, you may be aware that President Trump has a social media platform of his own called Truth Social. And he was doing a lot of posts on Truth Social during Biden's State of the Union address. And good for him. I'm glad he did. Now, one of them was somewhat problematic. He quoted Joe Biden, who said, "The pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to help beat cancer, turning setback into comeback." That's what Biden said in the State of the Union address. And Trump quoted him. There are quotation marks before what I just read and after what I just read. And then Trump said in all caps, "You're welcome, Joe. 9-month approval time versus 12 years that it would have taken you." So, Donald Trump is still bragging about the COVID vaccines. Now, most people on Truth Social are big fans of Donald Trump. The first response from somebody who goes by Lady Hawk is the huge letters, "Vaccine injury is real." So I'm sorry. If you want accountability for what the COVID vaccine has done to countless Americans, and a lot of us really believe that it has killed a lot of people, you're not going to get that accountability from Joe Biden. You're not going to get that accountability from Donald Trump. This is why a lot of people are concerned about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because this is his issue. And yet, boy, does he have a blind spot. But we'll tell you about RFK Jr.'s blind spot, and we'll tell you about his response to what Biden and Trump said about the vaccine. Also, updates on Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens coming up as the Doc Washburn Show continues.
If you've tried to buy a car recently, you realize you may have a hard time finding what you're looking for. People I know have actually bought vehicles from hundreds of miles away from where they live. That's where Red River Auto comes in. Red River Auto is a big old car dealership in the middle of the USA that believes in freedom, including your freedom to buy a car, truck, van, or SUV the way you want to. You can buy online and they'll drive it to you no matter where you are. Red River Auto wants to make your car buying experience as easy and transparent as possible. Red River Auto Group has perfected the online buying process. Just go to redriverauto.com and pick from hundreds of new and used vehicles. You can purchase a vehicle online. If you have any questions, one of Red River's trained experts will help you through the whole process. Red River Auto makes car buying online easy. Your whole car buying process is completely transparent. If you want to buy a car, truck, van, or SUV, order online from the nationwide car dealer that believes in freedom. The dealer that will deliver your vehicle to your front door, no matter where you live in the continental U.S., RedRiverAuto.com. You'll be glad you did. I want to tell you about the best-kept secret in American healthcare. Are you having problems with sinuses and allergies? Are you experiencing dizziness, vertigo, problems with your blood sugar, fibromyalgia, eczema, psoriasis, migraines? The Arkansas Upper Cervical Center might be able to help you. Let me tell you how. Your skull weighs anywhere from 8 to 15 pounds. It rests on the top bone of your spinal column, the atlas or C1, which only weighs 2 ounces. So it's really easy for your atlas to get out of alignment. If it does, your whole spinal column can get kinked up like a chain. When that happens, your central nervous system isn't able to communicate with the rest of your body as it's designed to do. I had severe hay fever for 5 or 6 weeks every spring all my life and migraines year round. When I got my atlas adjusted, the hay fever went away and the migraines went away for good. Whatever malady you're suffering from, do yourself a favor. Call my friends at the Arkansas Upper Cervical Center, 501-279-2009 for a free consultation. They've helped so many people I know. Please call them to see if they can help you. That number for your free consultation is 501-279-2009. If you're outside Central Arkansas, go to their website, turnmypoweron.com. Click on the tab that says find a doctor near you, and I sure hope you can. You want to drop your big liberal cell phone carrier? Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless carrier, is a perfect solution. Patriot Mobile has exceptional nationwide coverage and uses the same towers the main carriers use. Patriot Mobile guarantees your coverage. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, along with great discounts for our veteran and first responder heroes, as well as multi-line users. And switching to Patriot Mobile usually only takes 15 to 20 minutes. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you shift your support from the leftist progressive agendas of Big Mobile to the Christian conservative causes of Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile donates a portion of every dollar earned to organizations that fight for causes you care about. A portion of every dollar they earn is given back to the causes that support organizations that fight for First Amendment religious freedom, freedom of speech, Second Amendment right to bear arms, sanctity of life, and the needs of our veterans and first responders. Now more than ever, it's important to band together and support companies that share our conservative values. Switching is easy. Just do what I did. Go to patriotmobile.com. or call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. Make sure you use promo code DOC, that's D-O-C, for free activation.
All right, so again, Trump was out there on Truth Social with a quote from Joe Biden, who in his State of the Union address said the pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to help beat cancer, turning setback into comeback. And Trump's response was, "You're welcome, Joe. 9-month approval time versus 12 years that it would have taken you." Now, I just throw something in. I do not believe that the COVID vaccine or any of the boosters are helping to fight cancer. I think that's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. But anyway, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had a response, and you probably are not surprised he had a response because the COVID vaccine is his big issue, okay? And here's what he said, and then we'll get to RFK Jr.'s blind spot. He said, "Donald Trump clearly hasn't learned from his COVID-era mistakes. He fails to recognize how ineffective his warp speed vaccine is as the 9th shot is being recommended to seniors." I mean, how many boosters are going to be, right? RFK Jr. says, "Even more troubling is the documented harm being caused by the shot to so many innocent children and adults who are suffering myocarditis, pericarditis, and brain inflammation." He says, "This has been confirmed by a CDC-funded study of 99 million people. Instead of bragging about its speedy approval, we should be honestly and transparently debating the abundant evidence that this vaccine may have caused more harm than good. In fact, I look forward to debating both Trump and Biden on September 16th in San Marcos, Texas." This is the first I'm hearing that RFK Jr. will be at a presidential debate with Trump and Biden. I'll believe it when I see it. All right, now, if the vaccine injuries amount to your most important issue in the presidential race this year, and you're looking at Trump and you're looking at Biden and saying, "I got to vote for RFK Jr. because that's the only way we're ever going to get accountability on this issue," let me just ask you, other than this issue, never forget, RFK Jr. is a liberal. If you're pro-life, you're not going to like him on abortion. If you don't believe that man has the power to change the climate, you're not going to like what he believes about the climate. If you like the Second Amendment, how can you trust a guy like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who says this about Joe Biden?
You know what? I have a personal issue, which is my Secret Service protection. And I've known President Biden for 40 years, and he was a friend. With all of the issues about him, he was somebody who I thought at least had a kind of fundamental decency. And the fact, I just don't believe that he would have personally made the decision to deny me for Secret Service protection. I think somebody else is making those decisions.
Did you hear what Bobby Kennedy Jr. just said about Joe Biden, having known him for 40 years?
I thought at least had a kind of fundamental decency.
This is the guy you're going to trust? A guy who has known Joe Biden for 40 years and has always thought he had a fundamental decency. I'm sorry. That's a problem. Joe Biden's evil. Bobby Kennedy Jr. doesn't understand what evil is. And as I reported to you several months ago, after Donald Trump went on Meet the Press and criticized the heartbeat bills, the six-week abortion bans that led to Roe v. Wade being overturned, and insisted Republicans must compromise the Democrats on abortion, thereby legalizing most of them. I don't know how you get over that hump with any of these three guys. I was talking the other night to a friend of mine who is a pastor, not the pastor of my church, but he's a friend, and he's a pastor. And he said, how have we wound up in this situation? And I said, you know, I think a lot of us think that the second half of the first chapter of the book of Romans applies to our country. And maybe that's how we wound up here. Romans 1, starting with verse 18, says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions, for their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. So, we have Joe Biden pretending to be president in the Oval Office, who a year or so back invited this Dylan Mulvaney guy who goes around pretending to be a woman, the guy who got Bud Light in so much trouble. He invited Dylan Mulvaney to the White House, and Joe Biden said, God love you. Well, Mr. Biden, God does not love Dylan Mulvaney. He doesn't love you either. This whole thing about people saying God hates the sin but loves the sinner, good luck finding that in the Bible. The Bible says God hates the unrighteous. Meanwhile, you got Donald Trump. Megyn Kelly asked him last fall, can a man become a woman? And his response, well, I guess it all comes down to if you can give birth, and eventually they say they're going to be able to create a way for men to give birth. And he called Bruce Jenner Caitlyn, called him she. Recently allowed a couple of gay guys to quote-unquote get married at Mar-a-Lago. And if you think Bobby Kennedy Jr. is going to have a scriptural viewpoint on what I just read to you out of the Bible about why our nation is under God's judgment, you're crazy. Bobby Kennedy Jr. doesn't even understand that Joe Biden is evil. You got that? Bobby Kennedy Jr. doesn't even understand that Joe Biden is evil.
I thought at least had a kind of fundamental decency. And the fact, I just don't believe that.
Yeah, you just don't believe, do you? You know, I believe it's my duty not to sugarcoat things. I just can't do that. I can't sugarcoat things. I cannot and I will not. So, you know, that's where things are. We all have our blind spots. I'm trying to tell you the truth about Joseph Robinette Biden. I'm trying to tell you the truth about Donald John Trump. I'm trying to tell you the truth about Robert Francis Kennedy Jr. And it's not pleasant. And I don't enjoy it. But regardless of what happens in November, and look, I've been saying for the longest time that these prosecutions of Trump are political persecution. I've been saying for the longest time that it was outrageous that Joe Biden's attorney general sent the FBI to raid Donald Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago. I'm trying to call balls and strikes up in this piece. So when Trump a couple of months ago said, hey, I'm really excited because the FBI really needs this new $1 billion headquarters, I'm sitting there going, dude, they're trying to put you in prison. What do you mean they need a new $1 billion headquarters? Sometimes I think I'm more concerned about what happens to Trump than Trump is. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, that's crazy. Now, we're going to get to Candace Owens. I want to talk because, oh boy. Yeah, Candace Owens is out there apologizing to the Muslims. And you're never going to believe what for. Candace Owens is out there saying that we've really been too hard on the Nazis. Have you heard about this? And we'll get to it. But first, Tucker is in the news again. So I got a clip of an interview that a guy named Lex Fridman had with Tucker on his podcast. Lex Fridman said to Tucker, "I'm doing an Israel-Palestine debate next week, but I have to ask you just your thoughts, maybe even from a U.S. perspective. What do you think about Hamas attacks on Israel? What would be the right thing for Israel to do? And what's the right thing for the U.S. to do in this? I mean, looking at the geopolitics of it." And you're about to hear Tucker refuse to answer his question. Now remember, he's asking what about the Hamas attack on Israel, and what should Israel do, and what should the U.S. do? That's like three questions. I think Tucker might answer one of them.
I mean, it's not a topic that I get into a lot because I'm a non-expert, and because I'm not, unlike every other American, I'm not emotionally invested in other countries just in general. I mean, I admire them or not, and I love visiting them. I love Jerusalem, probably my favorite city in the world.
But you are emotionally invested in other countries. Since Hamas's attack on Israel October 7th, since your statement on November 15th, when you interviewed Candace Owens, that Americans who are concerned about Israel are making a mistake because they should be concerned about the border crisis and the fentanyl crisis in this country, since you're implying that you can't be concerned about Hamas's massacre of Israelis and also concerned about our border and fentanyl at the same time, you have gone to a number of foreign countries in which you have reported emotionally. So you're lying here. But please do carry on, Tucker.
But I don't have an emotional attachment to it. So
yeah, you do.
Maybe I've got more clarity. I don't know. Maybe less. Here's my view. I believe in sovereignty, as mentioned, and I think each country has to make decisions based on its own interest, but also with reference to its own capabilities and its own long-term interest. And it's very unwise for, I'm not a huge fan of treaties. Some are fine, too many bad. But I think U.S. aid, military aid to Israel and the implied security guarantees, some explicit, but many implied security guarantees of the United States to Israel, probably haven't helped Israel that much long term. You know, it's a rich country with a highly capable population. Like every other country, it's probably best if it makes its decisions based on what it can do by itself.
He asked you what you thought about Hamas attacking Israel. And what should Israel do about that? You're not going to answer the question, are you, Tucker?
So I would definitely be concerned if I lived in Israel, because I think, fair or unfair, and really this is another product of technology, social media, public sentiment in that area is boiling over. And I think it's going to be hard for some of the governments in the region, Jordan, Egypt, Turkey, to contain their own population. They don't want conflict with Israel at all. They were all pretty psyched, actually, for the trend in progress. The Saudi peace deal, which was never signed, but it would have been great for everybody. Because like trade, peace, normal relations, like that's good. Okay. Let's just say. I know John Bolton doesn't like it, but it's good. And it's kind of what we should be looking for. But now it's not possible. And, you know, if you had like a coalition of countries against Israel, I know Israel has nuclear weapons and has a capable military. and all that and the backing of the United States. But like, you don't, it's a small country. I think I'd be very worried. So there's that. And I don't see any advantage in to the United States. I mean, I think it's important for each country to make its own decisions.
What do you think about Hamas attacking Israel, Tucker? What do you think Israel should do, Tucker? Now, remember, because I did a two-part podcast about this late last year, Candace Owens never once condemned Hamas's attack on Israel. And 3 days later, by October 10th, she was using Hamas talking points to imply that Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. And Tucker let her get away with it. He let her lie. So now Lex Fridman is in a difficult position here. And trust me, I understand how difficult it is because I have been there. The challenge when you are interviewing someone much more famous than yourself, someone whom you respect, someone whom you admire, is to not let them off easy when they don't answer questions. And sometimes that is too much of a challenge for us mere mortals. I can look back. Not many, but a handful of interviews I've done in my many, many years in which I interviewed people and kick myself that I didn't push the issue when somebody was not answering a question. That I didn't ask tougher questions than I did. Lex Fridman, he's right there. So instead of saying, yes, but don't you condemn Hamas murdering 1,200 people in Israel? And they weren't just Israelis, you know. There were other people from other countries there too. Some of the hostages are Americans, you know. So instead of Lex saying, yes, but how hard would it be for you to condemn Hamas massacring all those people in Israel? Instead, Lex Fridman's response was this. He said, but it also is a place where you said that things are boiling over and it could spread across multiple nations into major military conflict. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Tucker really is not an expert because, as Osama bin Laden said many years ago, the Arab world takes notice of and admires the strong horse. He thought he could attack us after Black Hawk Down happened in Somalia because all of a sudden we looked like a paper tiger. Now, Hezbollah is attacking Israel from the north, but the idea that the Arab street, the idea that your average Muslim in Egypt or Jordan or wherever is going to take up arms against Israel, that shows how little of an expert Tucker is. That shows how naive he is. Yeah, good luck with that. That's not happening. But again, Lex obviously respects Tucker, is taking his concerns seriously. So instead of saying, why didn't you answer my question about Hamas attacking Israel? Why can't you at least condemn Hamas for attacking Israel? Lex takes seriously what Tucker said about the possibility of things boiling over, the possibility that the conflict could spread across multiple nations into a major military conflict, which I think is just ridiculous. So he says that, and Tucker comes back with this.
Yeah, well, I think very easily could happen. In fact, probably right after Ramadan, if I had to guess. And I pray it doesn't. But again, I don't think you can overstate the lack of wisdom, weakness, short-term thinking of American foreign policy leadership. These are the architects of the Iraq War, of the totally pointless destruction of Libya, totally pointless destruction of Syria, and the 20-year occupation of Afghanistan that resulted in a return to the status quo. So like their, of the Vietnam War, their track record of the Korean War, even going back 80 years, is uninterrupted failures, one after the other. So I just don't have any confidence in those leaders to improve. When was the last time they improved another country? Can you think of that? Oh, the Marshall Plan. Well, you look at Europe now and you're like, I don't know, you know, if that worked. But even if it did work, again, 80 years ago. So when was the last country American foreign policymakers improved?
The Marshall Plan worked, by the way. A lot of Europe was destroyed and we helped rebuild it. That's just amazing that he's calling that into question.
So if I were Netanyahu's in a very difficult place politically, impossible. I mean, I'm glad I'm not Netanyahu. And I'm not sure he's capable of making wise long-term decisions anyway.
Wait, I thought you weren't an expert. How come you're talking about Netanyahu as if you are?
But if I was just like an Israeli, I'd be like, I don't know if I want like all this help and guidance. So yeah, I actually think it's worse than just having just returned from the Middle East and talking to a lot of pretty open-minded sort of pro-Israeli Arabs who want stability above all. The merchant class always wants stability. So I'm on their side, I guess. And they're like, man, this could get super ugly, super fast. American leadership is completely absent. It's just all posturing. It's like people like Nikki Haley. You just wonder, like, how does an advanced civilization promote someone like Nikki Haley to a position of authority? It's like, what? Adults are talking. Nikki Haley, please go away. Like that would be the appropriate response. But everyone's so intimidated to be like, oh, she's a strong woman. She's so transparently weak and sort of ridiculous and doesn't know anything. And it's just like thinks that jumping up and down and making these absurd blanket statements, repeating bumper stickers is like leadership or something. It's like a self-confident advanced society would never allow Nikki Haley to advance. I mean, she's really not impressive. Sorry.
And you aren't either. What about Hamas attacking Israel, Tucker? And again, I'm not trying to come down on this Lex Fridman guy here, because if you've interviewed a number of people, there are some interviews you're proud of and some interviews that you look back and go, why didn't I, you know, handle it better? So at this point, Lex Fridman and Tucker spent about 43 seconds laughing and joking about war, which, you know, includes people being killed, a war that Hamas started on October 7th.
I just feel like you hold back too much and don't tell us what you really think.
But see, that's not a joke. That's true. He does hold back too much. He's not going to condemn the Islamic jihadists of Hamas. He's not going to condemn the fact that all the public opinion polls say the overwhelming majority of Arabs who live in Gaza and the West Bank support the massacre of October 7th. He'll never touch it. So I'm not going to play the rest of them clowning around, but Lex Fridman, it's ironic that what he said is truer than he realizes. I hope he comes to realize that someday. Hope Tucker does too. Candace Owens, coming up, apologizes to the Muslims, and you'll be amazed what for, and also says, hey, you know, the Nazis have been getting a bad rap. Coming up straight ahead on the Doc Washburn Show.
Mike Lindell says because of your amazing support for MyPillow 2.0, He's expanded MyPillow's USA manufacturing and jobs. So he's clearing out his Percale bed sheets by giving them to you at closeout prices. King size Percale bed sheets, only $39 a set. Queen size, only $35 a set. Full size, $29, and twin size, just $25. Use promo code DWS to take advantage of this once-in-a-lifetime offer. Right now, Mike's biggest My Slippers closeout sale ever is on. Get Mike's all-season My Slippers and sandals at clearance prices. Mike's all-season moccasin slippers are just $25. Mike's My Slipper sandals are just $19.50. They're both made with Mike's patented impact gel that absorbs and relieves pressure so you can comfortably wear them all day long. Just use promo code DWS for huge discounts. Remember, DWS stands for Doc Washburn Show. MyPillow.com, quantities are extremely limited at these amazing prices, so please order now. Just use promo code DWS. You know, the great Ronald Reagan once said, inflation is as violent as a mugger, as frightening as an armed robber, and as deadly as a hitman. Have you thought about the benefits of investing in precious metals? Here are five profound benefits. Number one, investing in precious metals is a hedge against inflation. Number two, it's a great way to diversify your portfolio. Number three, asset liquidity. Number four, precious metals tend to be a store of value. They don't tend to depreciate over the long haul. And last but not least, number five, precious metals can be a hedge against geopolitical uncertainty and the struggling U.S. dollar. Andrew Sorcini with Beverly Hills Precious Metals has been involved in gold and silver for over 40 years. Beverly Hills Precious Metals brings precious metals to the homes of everyday American citizens. Mike Flynn told us about them, and they are our gold buyer of choice. To find out more, just Google Beverly Hills Precious Metals. Make sure you ask about the General Mike Flynn silver coin and tell him Doc Washburn sent you. Beverly Hills Precious Metals helps folks protect their finances, wealth, and investments. Hey, let me ask you something. Why continue shopping big box stores if you can get the items you need from a family-owned company? Now you can get around this crazy inflation by shopping factory direct at a family-owned, made-in-America manufacturer. Americans are walking away from the big box conglomerates and deciding to buy only USA. Join with fellow patriots to cut off the cash flow of the big woke corporations that are trying to destroy our country. These products include fresh American-raised beef, raised in the Montana mountains near Yellowstone. This beef is known as Never Ever. Never has the animal ever been exposed to antibiotics, hormones, or vaccines. This prime or high choice beef is shipped directly to your door. Pricing and availability is exclusive only to our members and isn't shipped anywhere else in the world. Let's start voting with our dollars to make sure our purchases are supporting companies that promote freedom. Email us at buyonlyusa@proton.me and I'll have one of my guys contact you. buyonlyusa@proton.me.
All right. Time to revisit Candace Owens. Again, I did a two-part podcast late last year about the fact that she has basically become an apologist for Hamas, about the fact that she never criticized the massacre of October 7th, and by October 10th, she was using Hamas talking points to imply that Israel was committing genocide in Gaza, about the fact that Tucker Carlson swept in like a knight in shining armor on a white horse to cover for her when he brought her on his show November 15th and said, well, of course you condemned Hamas. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, anytime you are, sure, yeah. Not true. She didn't. And neither has he. Apparently. So, Candace Owens, let's see what she's been saying recently. How about putting forth the idea that maybe the Nazis have been getting an unfair rap?
I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. I think that it gets the definition gets poisoned by elitists that actually want globalism. Globalism is what I don't want. So when you think about whenever we say nationalism, the first thing people think about, in at least in America, is Hitler. You know, he was a national socialist. But if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. The problem is that he had dreams outside of Germany. He wanted to globalize. He wanted everybody to be German, everybody to be speaking German, everybody to look a different way. That's not, to me, that's not nationalism. So in thinking about how it could go bad down the line, I don't really have an issue with nationalism. I really don't. I think that it's okay. It's important to retain your country's identity and to make sure that what's happening here, which I think is incredibly worrisome in terms of the decrease in the birth rate that we're seeing in the UK, is what you kind of want to avoid. So I have no problems with nationalism. It's globalism that I try to avoid.
Okay, now, I know what you're thinking. There's a real problem here that she doesn't know how to pronounce the word important.
It's important.
It's a word that has two T's in it. But gentle listener, that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that Candace is saying if he had just wanted to make Germany great, that would have been fine, but unfortunately he had globalist ideas. Well, Candace, I think that he actually did some harmful things inside Germany. You know, there was that spot of unpleasantness about the Holocaust. Now, I know what you may be thinking. Send them off to concentration camps in Poland, so that goes across the border. But still, you know, they were rounded up in Germany. A lot of them, millions of them. Candace doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Her problem with Hitler was that he was a globalist. If he was just a nationalist, I mean, can you believe this? Can you imagine someone who would say something like that? What is it going to take for the powers that be at the Daily Wire to fire this woman? It's just incredible. Oh, and by the way, she said that back in December of 2022. Okay? She said some recent stuff about the Nazis too. But that was back in December of 2022. All right, here's something she said more recently.
And really bizarre facts. There was a man in Germany. He was Jewish at the time of the Nazi party. He was a doctor, an OBGYN. His name is Ernst Grafenberg, okay?
He was Jewish at the time of the Nazi party? What, did he become Jewish just in time for the Nazi party? He wasn't born Jewish? Come on, Candace.
Ernst Grafenberg, by the way, you might know him because you've heard of the G-spot. Yeah, that's named after him, the Grafenberg spot, so to speak. And he also developed a form of contraception called the Grafenberg ring. Today, the IUD, world's first IUD, was created by him. Well, essentially, there was this paranoia that people like him, the OBGYN, people that were Jewish, who they deemed to be Marxist, were going to, in German society, impact the Aryan race. And so he had to step down as the head of an OBGYN clinic. He later on gets arrested for trying to smuggle out stamps in Germany, and he is sentenced to 4 years in prison. Now, this part is fascinating. This is an actual historical fact. Sentenced to 4 years in prison, but he only serves two, okay? And I'm not talking about a prison camp. He literally was in prison. In 1940, somebody bailed him out of prison, which is weird. Why would on earth would the Nazi party agree to allow a Jewish man to get out of prison early? Well, guess who bailed him out? Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger bailed him out, brought him to America. to open her first birth control clinic. How on earth she pulled that off, I don't know. It was also backed by the Sex Institute, getting him bailed out and instead sent to America. Fascinating part of history that you will never learn in a textbook.
And you're a liar. Margaret Sanger opened her first birth control clinic in 1916, not in 1940. Candace Owens, once again, tells bald face lies. Just so you know. But wait. We're not through. Candace Owens now defends the Nazis' book burning.
Do you know which books the Nazis were burning? I'm asking this, and I'm telling you why it blew my mind, is because definitely something that we covered extensively, and you will cover extensively throughout the public education system, is the Holocaust, Nazi Germany. It's why so many people, when they're commenting, it seems like the only historical reference they have is, it's just like Hitler, they're literally Nazis. So that obsession with only referring to that historical aspect is partially because when you're in the public school system, you really focus on World War II and the Nazis. So I was shocked that I never learned throughout that schooling that the brown shirts, you know, the student activists that went around burning a bunch of books, were burning books that they deemed to be Marxist and that they deemed to be overtly sexual. And one of the first and most notorious book burnings was the student-led destruction of the library at the Institute for Sexual Research. That library was founded by a man named Magnus Hirschfeld, and he was the guy who actually first coined the term transsexual.
Okay. Now, a couple of problems here. I'm going to tell you what my friend Robert Spencer, purveyor of the Jihad Watch website, said over at PJ Media. But first, Candace Owens herself, back when she used to think the Nazis were the bad guys, less than a year and a half ago, October 2022,
so Matt Walsh is a Nazi. That's the idea, right? I thought it was actually the Nazis that were into experimentation. Pretty sure Hitler had a lot of experiments that were taking place. He experimented on twins. He experimented on children. So no, you are not on the right side of this issue. In fact, I would never, ever want somebody recording me supporting that. Radically supporting gender mutilation, gender reassignment surgery by another name. It is a stunning rebuke of our society that people don't recognize this as wrong. You know, it's incredible that people can become such ideologues that they are committed to this as if it's a cult and it's a religion, right? They wake up every day and they say, I have to get down to the state capitol and I need to stand up to this man who is essentially saying what Matt Walsh is saying, is allow children to grow up, right? Allow children to become adults. We're an adult. If you want to mutilate your own body, it's not really my business, right? It really is my business. But the idea that we should be seeding children with the notion, that is a lie, by the way. It is a lie to tell a child that they can pick their gender. It is a lie to make a man believe that if he gets breast implants, he's suddenly a woman, right? Despite this, despite the fact that we know that it is a lie from the top to the bottom of our society and our culture, we are perpetuating the slide to the detriment of young children.
Yes, we are. But here she says the Nazis were pushing that sort of thing. And then a year and a half later, she said, oh, no, the Nazis were burning books about that sort of thing. Which is it, Candace? All right, here's my friend Robert Spencer over at PJ Media. He said, article entitled, Candace Owens, yes, the Nazis burned books, but they were bad books. Said, Candace Owens recently asserted the entire field of psychology was built by pedophiles and perverts. He says, while she certainly had a point, the increasingly controversial conservative firebrand went even further, observing that the National Socialists, that's what Nazis means, kids, thugs, who burned books were burning books by those pedophiles and perverts. It's not hard to see where this is going. If the National Socialists were right to burn those books, in Candace Owens' view, maybe they weren't all that bad after all. He says, this has been coming for a good while. PJ Media's Lincoln Brown noted in November that Owens is accused of veering too close to the hard right anti-Semitic wing of the conservosphere. And since then, she has dived right into that wing, gaining new popularity among the growing legion of Jew haters who have come out of the woodwork since the October 7th, 2023 jihad massacres in Israel. Her recent broadcast will only increase that popularity all the more. Jerusalem Post reported that in her show on psychology, Candace Owens targeted not only Sigmund Freud, quote, and the controversial 20th century researcher John Money, but also Magnus Hirschfeld, the Weimar era German Jewish sexologist whose work was burned by Nazi brown shirts, unquote. Well, I mean, we all should condemn John Money, no question about it. I don't know as much about this Hirschfeld guy. But anyway, back to Robert Spencer's article. Owens asserted that all three men were homosexual and that they had a suspicious interest in the sexuality of children. What's more, she suggested that Hirschfeld showed a perverse interest in the sex lives of colonized Africans. Owens asserted that Hirschfeld was the guy who actually first coined the term transsexual. Well, again, Money was a pedophile. He was a bad guy. Freud, Hirschfeld, I don't know. I'm just letting you know the other side of where Candace is going. Spencer continues, the National Socialists, however, fought back against Hirschfeld's baneful influence in their own sweet way. Owens declared, I was shocked that I never learned that the brown shirts, the student activists that went around burning a bunch of books, were burning books that they deemed to be Marxist and that they deemed to be overtly sexual, including Hirschfeld's books and related works at his Institute for Sexual Studies. Spencer says, hang on a minute, Candace, the brown shirts were student activists? That's an awfully gentle term for the uniformed thugs the Nazis called stormtroopers who brawled in the streets with foes of Hitler and physically menaced those who dared to enunciate their dissent too loudly. Although they did fight with the Marxists, they were more like today's Antifa than anything else. In the book, The Coming of the Third Reich, historian Richard J. Evans explains how in the early days of Nazi Germany, stormtroopers, brown shirts, organized campaigns against unwanted professors in the local newspapers and staged mass disruptions of their lectures. To express dissent from Nazi positions became a matter of taking one's life into one's hands. The idea of people opposing viewpoints, airing their disagreements in a civil and mutually respectful manner was gone. One was a Nazi or one remained silent and fearful. Activists? Yeah, right. Candace Owens likewise failed to mention what the Post points out about the anti-Semitic nature of the attack on Hirschfeld. Nazi propagandists used Hirschfeld as an example of what they called degenerate Jewish sexuality. In other words, implying that all Jews were like this. And fascist activists at one point raised posters outside the researcher's home that read, Dr. Hirschfeld, a public danger, the Jews are our undoing. Candace Owens concluded saying, in my view, he's a pervert. It doesn't mean that his library, his institute, should have been burned down. There's no excuse for burning down an institute, but we don't then also pretend that somebody that is perverse is also a hero. Spencer says, that's right. Magnus Hirschfeld was anything but a hero. We do not, however, have to choose between the stormtroopers and the transsexuals. The deeply problematic aspect of Candace Owens' approval of the brown shirts burning books is not that she is registering approval of book burning. In Sweden and elsewhere in Europe recently, some courageous human rights activists have been burning the Quran in order to protest against the violence done in its name and in accord with its teaching and to stand for the freedom of expression in its waning days. No, the problem is that in applauding the brown shirts' actions, Candace Owens is opening the door to further approval of other actions of the brown shirts and of the Nazis in general. We have seen an explosion of anti-Semitism worldwide since the October 7th attacks. Attacks on Jews and wild claims about their alleged subversion of non-Jewish society have become commonplace. Candace Owens has chosen to add fuel to that fire. No number of clicks or retweets or whatever is worth making a volatile situation worse on false pretenses. Candace Owens would do us all a favor if she stepped back now and did some careful and thoughtful soul searching. That's Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, author of 27 books, including many bestsellers. Articles entitled Candace Owens, Yes, the Nazis Burned Books, but They Were Bad Books. Man, oh man, oh man. Good grief. But wait, there's more. More anti-Semitism from Candace Owens.
Kanye West, notoriously, obviously, when he tweeted out, I'm about to go DEFCON 3 on some Jews, and the media freaked out, and people in the Jewish community were understandably very scared, not knowing what he meant. And I very much abstained from speaking much about the issue because people were so emotional that people couldn't hear, even if I had shared. And even when Kanye did share that he was speaking about specific people in Hollywood that he believed were coming after him and were trying to control him. Rabbi Shmuley Boteach was threatening me, and it wasn't just him, it was also his daughter, were messaging me saying, don't mess with Jews. Very bizarre stuff, and they have not stopped, to be clear. And so what I believe is something that should be explored is whether or not what's happening is that, just like within all communities, there are gangs, right? Gangs can form, we understand this. In the Black community, we've got the Bloods, we've got the Crips. Well, imagine if the Bloods and the Crips were doing horrific things, murdering people, controlling people with blackmail. And then every time a person spoke out about it, the Bloods and the Crips would call those people racist. We get the media to say those people were racist. Any person that was talking about a specific gang, a small group of people, would say, oh my God, no. That's like slavery. You can't at all say anything bad about the Bloods and the Crips. And the entire Black community believed it and was scared and thought, oh my God, like, is slavery actually coming back? What if that is what is happening right now in Hollywood, if there is just a very small ring of specific people who are using the fact that they are Jewish to shield themselves from any criticism? It's food for thought, right? And I think, again, there have been enough people that are speaking out about a ring in Hollywood, also a ring potentially in DC, that we should start to ask those questions. All of us, Black, Spanish, Jewish, Chinese, Japanese, all Americans should want answers, because this appears to be something that is quite sinister.
But guess who she's not going to criticize? Well, I mean, I've already made it clear she refused to criticize Hamas about their massacre of all those people in Israel on October 7th. Tucker let her come on his show and lie about it. But she absolutely positively refuses to criticize Hamas. And now she's apologizing to Muslims. And this is just, this stunned me. I was flabbergasted. You're not going to believe what she claimed happened after September 11th, 2001 attacks on this country.
America is allowed to be used as a bank, really, for these wars. It's because Americans don't know anything. We know very, after 9/11, I think about it now, the propaganda to make me afraid of Muslims. I can't even imagine being a Muslim growing up after 9/11 in America, because I know how I felt about them. I was young, I was 11 years old, but that beating every day in our heads that every Muslim was a terrorist was the idea that you got.
I make jokes about it, but like, you don't understand. Like, I had to shave my face to go to the airports. My mom would make me shave my face. Yeah. Like, school, like, I was so young. This is actually fun. I had a mustache in like the fourth grade, and my mom made me nair it because she was like, you gotta, like, because it was really, really bad, because whatever your, like, the household would say, the kids have no filter. So they would just say whatever they wanted to me. But at a young age, I realized that I myself as a Middle Eastern was racist too. I was like, oh, it's not us, it's them. And so I would point my finger out of fear and be like, no, they did it. But then I went to what country did I just go to? Sorry.
Canada?
I went to Saudi Arabia. And I don't think I've ever been to a country that was more hospitable to me. The love that I got, the respect that I got, I literally sat back and I hung myself out to dry on a podcast. I go, wow, I was brainwashed. I was so scared. I didn't bring her.
Yeah, same. And so first I want to say, just like to all Muslims growing up during that time in America, I am sorry on behalf of America.
Yeah, I'm sorry
for the way that you were treated. It is so unacceptable. When I go back and I re-examine that propaganda, that brainwashing that took place in the classroom to make me scared of something, I didn't even know what a Muslim was. I remember going to the airport and someone was a Hindu and I was scared of him. I'm like, oh my God, they're gonna make him take this off of his head, blah, blah. I thought that was a Muslim, right? Mm-hmm. There was no education about anything. And the reason for that, you know, he who controls the textbooks controls the entire country, in my view, right? It was because everything that we did responding to 9/11 should be assessed as whether or not they were crimes against humanity. We bombed a million Iraqi civilians. We killed a million Iraqis. What were we doing in Iraq? The Saudis were on the plane.
That, yeah.
They just said there's weapons of mass destruction, and then they never found them. But they, in the process, they killed a million Iraqi civilians, right? And it made us think it's okay to just keep bombing Muslims. That was the purpose to me of that educational propaganda and brainwashing, is that we feel nothing for Muslims if they die.
How many lies did she tell in that 2 minutes and 19 seconds? How many lies? Okay. Again, let me go to a very, very brief, just two paragraphs from Robert Spencer over at Jihad Watch. Little two-paragraph article entitled, Candace Owens apologizes to Muslims for post 9/11 treatment, claims she was taught all Muslims were terrorists. He says she claims that it was beaten into students figuratively every day that every Muslim was a terrorist. When and where did this happen? It wasn't even a week after September 11, 2001, that George W. Bush went to a mosque in Washington, D.C. and declared that Islam is a religion of peace. The media inundated us all after 9/11 with material about how Muslims condemned 9/11. About how Muslims were being victimized by counter-terror measures. Those of us who dared to note that Islamic texts and Islamic teachings contained justifications for violence against unbelievers, which is a readily provable fact, were put in the position of constantly having to affirm that, of course, not all Muslims are terrorists. And nevertheless, we're constantly accused of saying that all Muslims are terrorists, despite never having said it. We were excoriated, we were deplatformed and marginalized as so-called Islamophobes anyway, while groups with demonstrable links to jihadists gained regular establishment media access and wide influence among governments and law enforcement officials. No one beyond a few nuts was actually claiming that every Muslim was a terrorist. Candace Owens is here repeating talking points that Islamic groups such as the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, which is linked to Hamas, perfected in the years following 9/11 in order to stymie and silence those who spoke the truth about the motives and goals of jihad terrorists. I very seriously doubt that she could document her claims with any actual evidence whatsoever. You know what? I doubt it too. It reminds me of something that Norm MacDonald said one time. He said, if an Islamic terrorist was ever able to get a suitcase bomb into New York City and kill 40 million people, well, I would really be concerned about the backlash against Muslims. A lot of people didn't get the joke. But again, whenever there is a big Islamic jihad attack in America, that's what we hear almost immediately. Oh, there's going to be backlash against innocent Muslims. And there never is. It's outrageous. All right, time for the Red River Auto tweet of the day. Brought to you by Red River Auto, the big car dealership in the middle of the USA that believes in freedom, including your freedom to buy the car, truck, van, or SUV of your choice. The way you want to, online at redriverauto.com. Have it delivered to your front door anywhere in the continental USA. Today's tweet of the day is the National Review article from Andrew McCarthy entitled, "The Biden DOJ Special Counsel's Indifference to Trump's Fair Trial Rights." And he says, in Trump lawfare, anything goes. Remember when the lawyer left legions lined up from Broadway to Guantanamo Bay to volunteer their services to imprisoned Al-Qaeda terrorists? Ensuring a 5-star due process menu for mass murderers whose objective was to return to the jihad, we were told, was the best way to promote our values globally. With the globe on fire 20 years later, it's probably best not to ask how that went. In more recent times, progressives have stayed domestic, railing about the so-called carceral state, going to bat for violent criminals of color, and maintaining that the justice system is inherently racist. Wait a second, you think, isn't that system run by the lawyer left and his top law school graduates? Now, this is no time for such impertinence. Not when we still have police departments to investigate. Ever wondered how lawyers can have no apparent qualms about defending monstrous clients? How they can sleep at night after zealously defending terrorists, murderers, organized crime buttons, rapists, and every other kind of sociopath? I've known and litigated against my share of such lawyers, grown fond of quite a few, and as for the others, realized their role is vital, even if it's not for me. An old defense lawyer friend, talented guy who knew how to charm a jury, told me he was often asked how in good conscience he could put his impressive skill set in the service of such clients. He would reach into his pocket, pull out one of those booklet copies of the Constitution, and proclaim, "That's my client." I once prosecuted leaders of a street gang cocaine business. At the very start, before we had gotten 5 minutes in, the judge explained to the jury that a criminal trial, which we are about to begin, is a search for the truth. "Objection!" came a shrill voice from the defense table. Thereupon the judge, the other lawyers, and I were subjected to a sidebar civics lesson. A defense attorney's impassioned lecture on how, far from a search for the truth, a criminal trial is the crucible in which we test the government's adherence to the Bill of Rights. It affords the accused the presumption of innocence, she thundered, giving him every bounce of the ball, compelling the prosecutor to meet the daunting burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So dedicated are we to these propositions, we proudly acquit even those we suspect may be guilty, since we would prefer that over the possibility of railroading a potentially innocent man. Finally, pointing at me, she admonished the judge that our courtroom trial was not a search for the truth. It was the Constitution in action, a sacred undertaking which his sworn duty was to hold my feet to the fire. A tad melodramatic? Sure. But to this day, I confess to a grudging admiration for it. It put some spring in the judge's step, which made my job harder. But striking the right balance between aggressiveness and fairness, grasping that the presumption of innocence is serious business, something conscientious government lawyers must overcome with evidence, not by gaming the system. That's the gig. That way, when a clever defense lawyer brandishes a pocket constitution that he claims is his client, the prosecutor can justly reply, yeah, it's my client too. During the Pleistocene epoch, in other words, back when dinosaurs still roamed the earth, when I was a young government lawyer, I was given to understand that these were eternal truths. Time traveling to 2024, I am left to ask, what would the media Democrat complex be saying if Republican prosecutors had indicted a Democrat presidential candidate in four different jurisdictions and were rushing to get him tried and they hoped convicted prior to Election Day? Imagine the howls if the prosecutors were arguing that the four courts should schedule trials without any concern about whether the physical, psychological, and financial burdens of the multiple cases in different districts hundreds of miles away from one another would undermine the defendant's ability to prepare for any one trial, let alone all of them. Yet something very similar is happening right now in the real world, except that the prosecutors are Democrats and the defendant is former President Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee to run against the incumbent Democrat president. In Trump lawfare, anything goes. A good example, last week I discussed an important proceeding in Florida. Judge Eileen Cannon was considering a new trial date for the Mar-a-Lago documents trial, one more realistic than the current May 20th date. Everyone knows May 20th is unrealistic with a case mired in litigation under the Classified Information Procedures Act, the complexity of which invariably makes a slog of any matter it applies to. Biden Justice Department Special Counsel Jack Smith thus proposed July 8th as an alternative. As Politico reports, Judge Cannon seemed to view Jack Smith's proposal as implausible given the breadth of discovery, mainly mounds of classified discovery, to which the defense may still be entitled, the sheer number of pretrial motions and hearings that remain to be submitted, conducted, and ruled on, and the fact that the Mar-a-Lago documents prosecution is not the only case on the South Florida federal court's docket. The huge problem, about which prosecutors seem astonishingly apathetic, is that Trump is facing not just one criminal trial, but four of them. Normally, this would be a first-order concern for a prosecutor. The government's lawyer is responsible for ensuring that the defendant gets a fair trial. Though that may sound hokey, it is demanded by due process, which prosecutors are duty-bound to uphold. But we don't just rely on the honor of the government lawyers in this regard. Self-interest factors in. Nothing is more likely to get a conviction reversed than denial of the defendant's fair trial rights. Prosecutors are supposed to ensure that the trial court record can withstand the searching review of appellate courts. There's nothing normal about prosecutors in a hot panic to get a conviction by a certain date, specifically Election Day. If Trump had nothing else going on but the Florida case, a July 8th trial date would be challenging. There's too much pretrial preparation that needs to be done. Most significant in terms of the constitutional right to a fair trial is the discovery that needs to be reviewed, a task complicated by the mandate that classified discovery may only be perused by government-approved defense lawyers in government-approved secure locations. Of course, Trump has lots going on beside the Florida case. I'm not just referring to the little matter of the presumptive Republican nominee's national presidential campaign. Among the array of criminal prosecutions pending against him, Trump faces the trial in Manhattan on March 25th, about 2 weeks from now. Any good litigator will tell you that once you're within 2 weeks of a significant trial, preparation leaves you with scant time for pressing matters in your own life, to say nothing of other cases with remote trial dates. The case brought by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg may be absurd and abusive, but it is inarguably significant. Trump faces 34 felony counts that, statutorily speaking, amount to a century plus of potential incarceration. According to the latest estimates, the trial will last for up to 6 weeks, with the court sitting for 4 days a week, taking Wednesdays off. At the hearing, Jack Smith's underlings suggested to Judge Eileen Cannon in Florida that this Manhattan trial was no excuse to delay the proceedings of the Classified Information Procedures Act in Florida. After all, the prosecutors theorized those proceedings could be scheduled for Wednesdays. What? During a criminal trial, non-trial weekdays and weekends are not downtime for the lawyers and defendants. To the contrary, that is the time they use to get ready for what's ahead in the trial, scrutiny of the discovery, preparing to cross-examine government witnesses, research and writing of any relevant motions, preparing for the defense case and the defendant's potential testimony, and so on. They are long days, not off days. Moreover, even if there were time to shelve all that necessary work in the middle of a complicated trial so the lawyers and defendant could turn to preparation for another trial that's months away, there's a stubborn geographical fact of Manhattan's being situated over 1,200 miles away from South Florida. There's no way everyone could get down to Florida for a full day's work on Wednesdays, then be back in the New York courtroom ready to go on Thursday morning. Remarkably, the attitude of Jack Smith's prosecutors was that this bind is Trump's fault. It wasn't that Jack Smith knowingly timed his indictment in a way that made the bind inevitable. It wasn't that Jack Smith, who could have brought a straightforward obstruction case, elected to bring dozens of Espionage Act charges that have frozen the proceedings in the tundra. No. The blame here lay with the defendant, prosecutors rationalized, because Trump elected to have the same lawyers represent him in both Florida and Manhattan. The implication was that if Trump would just pony up more millions for more legal teams in response to the Democrats' strategy of indicting him in multiple jurisdictions simultaneously, then one Trump team could handle proceedings down south from March through May while Trump was on trial up north. Now, this is breathtaking on two counts. As prosecutors well know, absent a conflict of interest, a defendant is entitled to qualified counsel of his choice. What Jack Smith is saying, however, is that this right, rooted in the Constitution, should be nullified because the Biden Justice Department wants Trump tried and convicted before Election Day, notwithstanding unambiguous Justice Department guidelines that forbid prosecutors from basing law enforcement decisions on electoral considerations. But it's worse than that. Judge Cannon quite properly schooled the prosecutors on the more fundamental point of constitutional law. Even if Trump had separate sets of lawyers who could work full-time on two different cases, to say nothing of four, a defendant has a constitutional right to be present at all important proceedings in a criminal case. There is no way Trump could be present for classified proceedings that are critical in his Florida case if he's in Manhattan attending his criminal trial. Yet Jack Smith would negate Trump's constitutional right to be present and meaningfully participate in his defense in the Mar-a-Lago case, again, in service of President Biden's campaign imperative that Trump be convicted on federal charges before Election Day. To repeat, Smith intentionally created this bind. Alvin Bragg indicted Donald Trump first last spring, after which Judge Juan Marchand set the March 25th, 2024 trial date. Only after that did Jack Smith indict Trump on the Mar-a-Lago charges, now including two other defendants and 42 felony counts. The denial of Trump's fair trial rights is not a bug, it's a feature. It's worse than that, actually, much worse. Alvin Bragg unsealed his Trump indictment on April 4th, 2023. Jack Smith thus waited until the putative Republican 2024 presidential candidate was locked into a March 2024 trial before pulling the trigger on his Mar-a-Lago indictment on July 8th, 2023. He then pressured Judge Cannon to set a preposterously early trial date in a case, again, involving CIPA, the Classified Information Procedures Act, which is very complex. And that's how we got the schedule May 20th, 2024 trial. Only after he had Trump locked in for a Florida trial, likely to be of 2 to 3 months duration, starting this spring, did Jack Smith finally indict Trump in the 2020 election interference case, the so-called January 6th case in Washington, D.C. By the time the January 6th charges were unveiled, August 1st, 2023, the Biden Justice Department had been investigating what happened at the Capitol on January 6th for over 30 months. The evidence against Trump, such as it is, had been notorious for years. There had been an impeachment trial, hundreds of related criminal prosecutions, extensive congressional investigations. Nevertheless, Jack Smith waited until late summer 2023 to indict, knowing this would enable him to push for a trial smack in the middle of the 2024 campaign and Trump-hostile Washington, D.C. to boot. And once Jack Smith indicted the January 6th case, Alvin Bragg, an elected progressive Democrat, signaled he would defer to the feds. So, Jack Smith persuaded Judge Tanya Chutkan, an Obama appointee with a history of making derogatory statements about Trump, to set a trial date of March 4th, 2024. That date has now been dashed by Trump's immunity appeal. Jack Smith first pleaded with the Supreme Court to hear that appeal on an emergency basis by cutting the D.C. circuit out, and then pleaded with the Supreme Court not to hear it at all once he got a favorable D.C. circuit ruling. Gamesmanship driven by the prosecutor's futile desperation to preserve a March 4th trial. So, but let's be clear. Smith's original scheme was to have the Republican nominee continuously on trial in court rather than out campaigning for 6 consecutive months, from March through late May in Washington, and then from late May into August in Florida, after which, if all went as designed, it would be time to sentence Trump for Washington convictions and potentially have him in custody as he awaited sentence on Florida convictions, all as the November election loomed. Now, with the immunity appeal disrupting the schedule, Jack Smith has revised the plan so that Trump would be tethered to courtrooms for 9 months. That is, Alvin Bragg would try Trump from late March into May, then Jack Smith would try him in Florida from July into September, and then, with Jack Smith having decided that DOJ's rule about avoiding law enforcement actions within 2 months of an election is inapplicable to Trump, Smith would try Trump in the January 6th case from mid-September right through the November election. Now, let's put aside that Jack Smith's objective is to keep the Republican nominee off the campaign trail, where Trump could contrast his energy with Biden's senescence. The due process question is, when exactly is Trump supposed to prepare for these trials, convictions in any of which, at his age, 77, could effectively result in a life sentence. As far as the Biden Justice Department special counsel is concerned, that's Trump's problem. We're not talking here about the case of a foreign terrorist, an urban street gang, or a migrant, the defendants who inspire in the lawyer left a Bill of Rights fervor that would make James Madison blush. No, we're talking about Trump. So don't be bothering the prosecutors with such trifles. They've got an election to prepare for. If this were being done to a Democrat or even to a common criminal, the righteous indignation of Democrats and journalists would be blaring and incessant. Jack Smith has decided, however, that with Trump in the dock, he can check out of the due process business. What remains to be seen is whether the courts, too, are indifferent to the fair trial rights they exist to uphold. Now, that is Andrew C. McCarthy, senior fellow at the National Review Institute and former federal prosecutor over the National Review. The article is entitled "The Biden DOJ Special Counsel's Indifference to Trump's Fair Trial Rights." And let the record reflect that Brother McCarthy is really not a fan of Donald Trump. See, but he is a big fan of the Constitution, and he thinks that just about everything they're doing in these prosecutions is violating Donald Trump's constitutional rights. That is our Red River Auto tweet of the day, brought to you by Red River Auto, the big old car dealership in the middle of the USA that believes in freedom, including your freedom to buy the car, truck, van, or SUV of your choice the way you want to, online at redriverauto.com, and have it delivered to your front door anywhere in the continental USA. You've been listening to episode 429 of the all-new Doc Washburn Show. The views and opinions expressed on the Doc Washburn Show do not necessarily reflect those of our advertisers, but they love us and we love them. If you have any questions for us, email us, contact@docwashburnshow.com. Today's program has been produced by Tim Terrible, directed by Mick Messy. This has been a terribly messy production. Portions of today's show will be taken overseas and dropped. If you'd like a transcript of today's episode of the all-new Doc Washburn Show, simply peel the roof off a Rolls-Royce panel truck and send it to Mansour's Computer Solutions, 7th floor of the Ephemeral B. Smoot Building, Whitehall, Arkansas, in care of Sheriff Mansour Sempier X, Senior Vice President, Engineering, IT, and Interoperability for the Doc Washburn Show. And that's the way it is, Saturday, March 9th, 2024.